6. Micronukes versus thermite/thermate at WTC. Transcript of discussion which took place at the Vancouver 9/11 Truth Conference with Professor Steve Jones and Dr. William Deagle, the 24th of June 2007. Transcript by Andrew Johnson. Footnotes mainly by Andrew Johnson with additional comments by Professor Judy Wood. This is quite an extraordinary discussion in many ways, and in my view clearly demonstrates that neither Jones nor Deagle are being completely honest in their discussion. You will hear them claiming to be discussing the evidence, but in reality they don't discuss much evidence at all. Deagle claims Seattle has been pre-wired with mini-nukes. Jones suggesting that if there is a nuke attack, 9/11 truthers should get dust samples and send them to Deagle or Jones. Deagle claiming he has evidence of mini-nukes from, quote, contacts, but he hasn't completed testing his samples, even though he is very concerned to find out what they will use for the next attack. Deagle claims he is 100% sure thermite or super thermite was used to destroy the towers. Deagle describes the effects on toasted cars as being potentially from an EMP pulse, but he dismisses the evidence for DEW. Jones gets Deagle to agree that the evidence of no planes hitting the WTC towers is, quote, ridiculous. Deagle claims micronukes were used in the Oklahoma bombing. Deagle doesn't know whether they are fusion or fission nukes. Jones mentions WTC iron quite a few times. Both Jones and Deagle talk about an isotope of iodine-110, but this is extremely obscure. The stable isotope of iodine is 127. Please listen to the following audio with interspersed comments by the author, Andrew Johnson.
Well, welcome. I really appreciate all the work you're doing, Dr. Jones. You're a scientist and a gentleman, because the pursuit of science is devoid of ego. And the real issue we have here at both the Vancouver 9/11 is the issue of we need to find out not only the plans, but also the devices that they're using. The devices they used in Oklahoma City to bring and demolish that building, the World Trade Center, and the grave danger they're going to use similar types of things on a higher scale in cities across America, Canada, otherwise.
Let me interject a thought there, Bill. As I've been working on this understanding of what you're talking about.
For a long time, yeah.
Quite a while. The central goal I have now is justice. I think we actually have sufficient data to motivate a trial.
Oh, well, you do. In fact, you have sufficient evidence. I see I'm a medical legal doc as well, and I belong to the... Yeah. I take it. So I agree. I think we have enough evidence for an international tribunal and treason trials.
Right.
And I think you're right. But if we had even additional evidence, it's not just activating an international trial that I'm concerned about. I'm concerned also about activating the public on a larger scale to understand the magnitude of the criminal activity because of the danger of the next events from my contacts with inside NSA, CIA, and other higher contacts.
Sure.
That the next event, I was told, the two next biggies, and this was proven by the documents I showed today from Philadelphia, where they're testing, giving 50,000 homes a package with a U.S. Postal Service worker, a city policeman, armed, providing a box of, quote, medicines, which may include vaccines that will be given at gunpoint to citizens, then they cannot refuse it.
So the question arises, how would citizens react to that?
And the danger I see is that I was told that they had, at least by mid-90s, 22 cities pre-wired with nukes, not little ones that could go off and just cause a building to dissolve, but big ones that could take out, say, 16 city blocks of the core cities like Los Angeles and Denver and other ones, so they could declare a total state of martial law, not just a partial one de facto with the, you know, Dr. Krakosi and, in the middle of the airport, constantly being kind of, you have to take off your shoes and you're constantly surveilled. And next May 11th, we're going to have a tracker ID. They're literally going to make a total police state. And I think they want to do it by the final transforming events I see as a pandemic and nukes going off in multiple cities, because I think they'll transcend just using conventional, even advanced explosives like thermite to really big ones.
I think
we agree on that.
Yeah. What do you think of
that? Well, I mean, you're looking...
In other words, I'm looking at the next thing.
Brzezinski, before a Senate committee and, of course, in the Congress, just this year in February, said...
Right.
he could see some action, some event in the United States or elsewhere, but that would be blamed on Iran, and that would then justify a defensive attack on
Iran.
Of course.
So that's what Cheney said too. Yeah, he said that before. He ordered Stratcom to prepare attack orders against 440 targets inside Iran.
And they're looking at using tactical nukes.
Right.
I understand.
Yes.
I mean, it's a possibility. So this is a very serious situation.
Right.
Now, I think there's some evidence that we agree on, Bill.
So let's not talk about the evidence we don't agree on. Is this cherry-picking evidence, perhaps?
Oh, absolutely.
I thought that was a good place to start.
Yeah.
That we agree, first of all, that the discussion should be evidence-based.
Wouldn't it be better to have the evidence displayed on a screen for easier or more focused discussion? There is no PowerPoint here, no coordinated discussion, just a friendly chat. Even for supposedly volunteers, there are or were both professional scientists. Can't they do better than this?
Absolutely, it can be based on opinion.
Right.
Because the thing is, ultimately, if it is not evidence that could ultimately either get into a court or the public, meet the court of public opinion,
right,
then it should be dismissed, but it should be based on scientific evidence.
It needs to be based on...
And yet, portions of the following discussion are based on opinion only.
Solid evidence.
Right,
okay.
Right.
We agree on that. And as we look at the evidence, I don't think this is the place to go through all the evidence.
Yeah, no.
But we both looked at quite a bit of the evidence then, and
yeah,
we agree.
It's like the scientific method. You have to have a hypothesis and a theory and a number of anomalies that could be explained by that theory. Then you propose a test of the hypothesis, null hypothesis, and the test I see, besides the evidence we have so far from the U.S. Geological Botrytium, and there's some discussion about whether it could be from something like exit signs, which I think is a bit of a stretch, but the thing that will help us to close that door to determine if there were indeed some kind of devices in one or more places in the building would be if there's heavy ice stones. Now, if they're not present, then it means that obviously
I want to establish what we agreed on first.
Yeah, we agreed on the thermite, of course.
There's considerable evidence.
Oh, yeah. There's no disagreement there at all.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I think that we both looked at the directed energy weapons.
That's no evidence. In fact, I was a doctor taking care of people working for 6 years on directed energy weapons for U.S. Star Wars.
That settles it then. No discussion of the lack of debris, justification effects. Deagle was a doctor in the SDI program. He knows. That's all we need to know.
I know
a lot more background.
Yeah, so I know how about the Tom Bearden's type of coherence interference weapon systems and scalar weaponry and plasma cannons and...
Is Jones about to say that he has little experience with energy weapons? 6 months ago, he said they didn't exist.
Lockheed Martin and Skunk Works and the Lucent Technology, these companies are working with General Dynamics, so
okay.
I'm familiar with that.
Agree about that. Let me try one more while we're on a roll.
He mentioned Lucent Technologies, which was formerly part of AT&T, a telecommunications company, which has had little to do with weapons technologies.
How about the no planes hit the towers?
That's ridiculous.
Okay.
In fact, what I was told from my contacts is
isn't this an opinion? No evidence, after all, is discussed here. The fact that planes hit the towers, or didn't hit the towers, they don't discuss the evidence.
U.S. Air Force, Air Force Academy, and so on, those were probably not United Airlines jets, but they're probably E-10s that were flown in there. That's what they told me. And that, in fact, I knew this from being a civil aviation examiner, is that all jet aircraft, commercial jet aircraft, worldwide have been capable of being remotely taken over control for over 30 years.
Well, so we agree that jets did hit the tower.
Oh, yeah, jets hit the tower.
So they don't discuss the evidence that proves that planes didn't hit the towers.
Also, okay, now let's get to the...
And, of course, the other is the architectural thing, that jets couldn't take them down, because I have friends that are architectural. In fact, across the street from where I live in Halifax...
He has friends that are architectural? Doesn't he mean friends that are architects?
This thoracic surgeon's son is an architect in New York, and he said that he knew immediately, literally within seconds after the quote jets hit the towers, that there was no evidence whatsoever ever, because they teach this course in architecture around the world, that these buildings were built to withstand up to a 9.5 earthquake.
The point is that New York isn't in an earthquake zone, so why build the buildings to withstand an earthquake?
And there's absolutely no evidence that a jet aircraft could bring down these buildings at all, or even the burning of furniture or anything else. So the normal combustible materials couldn't have done to those buildings. It had to be controlled demolition.
Right, so we agree with that.
Yeah.
Okay, now let's talk about the possibility of mini nukes. I'm just going to rotate a little bit here. So let's see. The evidence that you have then for this hypothesis?
Well, I went over those 30 points, and I don't want to go point by point, but I think the key thing that I see is is evidence such as Tesla-type effects, the paramagnetic effects on objects at a distance that are not due to a thermal pulse from a regular conventional weapon. And I'd like to see those vehicles. That's another piece that should be looked at. Like the engine blocks, to see if there's paramagnetic effects on air conditioners, the engine blocks, and the mirrors, because the physical evidence supports that hypothesis. I think the second thing...
Let's talk about the vehicles for a minute.
Yeah.
So you're saying that the damage on the vehicles would be...
Is more consistent.
We agree that it would be great to have a vehicle. I'm not sure we're going to get one.
Yeah, I think they're still stored down there. I think that the evidence...
Can I just ask a question? Have we actually seen those vehicles?
We have photos.
We have photos from them, and apparently...
They're all documented. And do we have the location of them?
I heard they're still stored down there, actually.
This is a good point, though, that the vehicles...
Where are the vehicles stored? If Deagle knows where, why does Jones say we're unlikely to get a car? Don't they want to check this out for the science? It could disprove the Jew, for example.
So we're on FDR Avenue there. That was quite a ways away from the World Trade Center.
Right.
There's a paper in the journal by James Gourley, Journal of 9/11 Studies,
That
argues, I think, quite persuasively, that those were probably near the towers during the collapses and were towed.
But what about the evidence to back up this statement that the vehicles were near the towers? This is just an opinion.
Subsequently to the FDR, so that they were not that far away when they were damaged. Do you see the difference?
Well, I think one of the things we see is actually their parked vehicles that we pretty well sure weren't, that wasn't the situation.
It has been established that there were at least 1,400 toasted cars taken to the junkyard. How many cars can fit on Vesey Street? Certainly 1,400 cars can't fit there. Therefore, they all couldn't have been parked adjacent to the World Trade Center. If they claim that they are still all from the underground parking garage, how did they get toasted there? If that were the case, that's pretty good evidence that the tower levels weren't crushed. But still, how could thermite splash on them in the basement?
But the other thing was that part of the vehicle in front, let's say the front of the vehicle, was affected, and areas, even just a matter of, like, in the back part of the vehicle, was affected. But you'd expect it was in the immediate thermal pulse area, let's say, of a conventional big explosive, let's say a lot of TNT.
Let me address that.
Yeah.
Again, directed energy effects are being discussed here, even if from some EMP or micronuke weapon to which Deagle alludes. So this contradicts the earlier statement about no evidence of directed energy.
If there was a thermite, which we'd agreed on, so you have these hot particles, iron principally, in the dust being blown at the vehicle, that could also give this pattern of damage near the buildings because of the hot particles blasting and carried with the dust then and blowing against the vehicle. So what I'm saying
is... You're thinking the studio. Just looking at the pattern, and again, this is only hypothesis. I don't think it gets to the theory level. But when you look at the effects, if it were indeed these vehicles were at the distance away, then they're at a distance that's so great that the thermal pulse is unlikely, and also the kind of damage indicates it's more paramagnetic than thermal. In other words, the damage would have affected, say, mirrors, but yet would not have melted the vehicle. In other words,
let's see.
Is paramagnetic energy the same as directed energy? They seem to be discussing the evidence for directed energy.
I looked at those corroded vehicles quite carefully. I've discussed them with a number of people, scientists. And what you see is pockmarks in some cases, which affects the metal and appears to be quite corrosive. This would be consistent with a sulfidation attack.
Yeah, well, you could have a combination of both. You could have a combination of pyroclastic jets of super hot iron sulfur compounds like you're talking about, and a paramagnetic, because you could have both, or you could have had combination, because one of the things I was told that happened in Oklahoma City is that they had layers. Whenever you do a controlled demolition, whether it's, and I've talked to munitions people since 9/11 on this that have worked inside the military, Army Corps engineers and other people in Special Op and Delta, say if you're ever going to do a controlled demolition, you have to use things like high explosive cord, thermate, RDX, and other things. And of course, the thermate make in the super thermate are great for cutting, but you have to have charges to blow out the sections. Plus, you have to have enough kinetic energy to blow, you know, giant sections. So it had to require pretty massive bombs to actually blow it up.
So we agree that there's corrosion, and it could be a combination, perhaps, or it could be thermate.
Yeah, it's probably later. I think it's multiple types of detonation devices.
And the evidence for this thought would be, as his results of isotopic testing are not in yet, then what is the evidence for Deagle saying that it's multiple types of weapons or detonation devices?
It's what's called a crucial test. What we want is a test that doesn't allow for both hypotheses or a combination, but rather one will say this, the other will say that. And I think we agree that radioisotopes due to neutron activation
is going
to
be very good. It'd also be if we get that
crucial test.
Plus, if we got, for example, that I call a girder fry, which is that giant girder that's kind of curved like a big. Could that girder, that giant girder, be fried literally by hot gases or whatever from conventional thermite or super thermite or other high explosives? Other than that, and melted this giant girder, and if indeed it did have neutron activation, it would have iron 58 isotopes.
Okay, here we go now. Iron, you agree that there were 59, right? Iron 59?
Well, you're going to get iron 59, 58. 58 stable isotopes.
So what we want is to look for the short-lived isotopes.
And longer ones, too. You'll see some long, stable ones.
Okay, but what we want is the ones that would represent neutron activation.
Right.
Cobalt 60 might be a
cobalt 60
iodine 110.
The repeated reference to iodine 110 before it changes to 131 is puzzling. The stable isotope of iodine is 127, and 110 seems a long way out for this isotope. So why are they both talking about it? This is unclear.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So if you show these heavier isotopes, then that's going to help, yeah. Right. Some of them have short-life half-lives, like cobalt 60 is a half-life, I think, 5 years.
Okay, but that's enough, because we're only 5.5 years out.
So we can pick up, so we find cobalt 60, which is one of our test isotopes for testing. Yeah. Now, the other thing that I don't know was done, and I don't know if you did more work on this, was did we test for other chemical residues, because super thermite by itself is enough to cut them, but you had to have other high explosives to blow those pieces apart once they're cut.
Isn't it true, though, that the super thermite, if it has a fine dust, the oxide will explode?
That's correct.
It'll be explosive, but what I think all these people do is there's always a degree of redundancy whenever you're going to explode, like the Sands Hotel in Las Vegas. So they have redundant systems. So it's almost certain that they had layers of explosive type of things. This is just a hypothesis that they probably used backups to make sure that whenever this is going down, they couldn't afford, like for example, we noticed, I think it was WTC-6 at the 26th floors from the top. You saw in the video a portion of the building literally turn and then tilt, and then all of a sudden that building just went poof.
Poof is a term that Dr. Wood has used. So why is Deagle using it in this context?
So whatever turned that building into, you know, destructive, ash cloud, had to be powerful enough to literally take that tilted piece that could have fallen over and fallen a great distance, and literally turn it to fine particles, whether they're, you know, nanoparticles or just a dust. You know what I mean?
Could that be conventional weapons?
Sure, it could be. The only way for us to test the hypothesis is to measure things like neutron activation. But I wonder if that's chemical tests that I said that measured other chemical residues for other chemicals. Did anybody test those?
Let's get back to the crucial test, which I think we
with the neutron activation. Yeah.
Neutron activation. So we're looking for radioisotopes that will tell us whether or not there were nuclear explosives used.
Right.
Let's look, for example, at, and I know you're doing some testing.
We're going to do some testing on multiple, and we expect that as little as 10% of the ash material of the building from whatever particle size we'd be acceptable to actually do the test on. Because we expect, and I'm certain that you're right, that there was thermite or super thermite in the building, which would...
No evidence has been provided that super thermite was, or has been used, or is in use anywhere. There's no evidence of this.
Would have generated a type of ash that would not show neutron activation.
Absolutely.
But there may be additional material in parts of the building where they may have used these devices, but say they're 50 to 100 yards.
What size of mini nuke are you talking about?
The ones that I was told that they removed unexploded from the Oklahoma City Murrah building, and the guy that told me got court-martialed and I got fired in death threats, so I can believe them, were 0.1 kiloton micro nukes, U.S. Army Corps engineer, and that they measured tritium, which means they're...
These are initiated with a fission reaction?
Give me the details on that. They were U.S. Army Corps engineer, fourth generation micronukes, and what I was told from my other contacts is they have micronukes now that can be activated by very high-powered magnetic pulses and lasers, too, so they have those type of fourth generation micronukes available now. This is classified stuff that I was told this by.
Let me say, if we can actually get to 0.1 kiloton fusion bombs, we have a solution to our energy problems. Without using fission as the initiate, I really doubt that those exist. But are you sure they exist?
That's what he told me.
Who told?
He was 81.
Why does Jones stop mid-sentence? Isn't he supposed to ask Deagle who told him this? Surely Deagle could just say, "I can't tell you." Jones has no need to worry, does he? Why is there such a nervous disposition to this part of the discussion?
It was a special op agent that told me this.
Without fission. But still you get...
They might have had a fission-fusion bomb. They might have had a fission-fusion...
Either way.
Yeah, because you can have a fission-fusion bomb, but they...
So, do micronukes exist or not? The common or garden hydrogen bomb is a fission-fusion bomb. Nothing new here. But it's very large. It's not small. You can't make them small.
I was also told by other independent contacts that they have now fourth-generation nukes that actually use very high-powered, giga-Tesla-type pulsed magnetic effects.
So what exactly is a giga-Tesla-type pulsed magnetic effect? If it's a magnetic effect, it sounds like it could be a directed energy effect.
Create a fusion reaction, and also these super high-powered lasers. So I'm not sure.
Why would high-powered lasers be used to set off a detonation in a building? Wouldn't ordinary remote detonation be used? Sounds like Deagle is getting confused with the experimental lasers used to initiate a fusion reaction in hot fusion programs, which is called inertial confinement fusion, which you can look up on somewhere like Wikipedia or other educational websites.
Data, I find it very hard to believe. Fusion for...
Well, one of the things that's happened is one of the things that happens, and I found this out from my, many years of working in different things and working on some projects externally and internally.
What projects, externally or internally? To, from what, or where? Where did Deagle work and where were the projects done?
Is it even up to the university level that at any of the universities you're only received the 4% of what I call the doorstep of knowledge? And whenever you get into these highly classified programs, that it's on a need-to-know basis and it's extremely... narrow in scope and on a need-to-know basis, so that they literally have budgets that are unending. When they tried to recruit me to work on, for example, the Super Soldier program at UCLA, my professor, Dr. Wallace Tortelot, who's the director, had spent $23.5 million just on personal acquisitions and equipment just for his own office. And they told me there was no end to the budget.
Okay.
So what I'm saying is that the level that's in the public universities is nowhere near what the actual state-of-the-art is. Facilities that are totally classified in these government facilities.
Let's get back to the test for radioisotopes.
We're going to be testing at one or more labs, and then if it's negative, it'll even put more support, because I agree about the thermite. But I'm also wondering if there were additional things besides thermite, and the reason is we want to check those, because here's the key issue to me. If it shows it wasn't, and they used thermite, will they go directly to nukes next time, or will they use a combination of the same kind of things in the next type of explosive to destroy the cores of cities?
The next one is a little beyond the question. It's an important issue.
Right, because...
like to focus on, so you're going to look for radioisotopes.
Right.
I support looking, doing this type of testing.
Right.
I think that's the way to do it.
Yeah.
It's a crucial test. If you see an abundance... and not just, you know, fluctuations statistically.
No, you got to be, it's got to be a large enough margin that it goes beyond,
you know, 100 times or something, the iron 58 or 59,
right,
or the iodine 110,
right.
Then you say, well, this is truly anomalous. We really have something now we can home in.
But it'll help. But
on the other hand, if you don't see those large excesses,
well, it has additional support to your thesis, which is disturbing.
Well, perhaps. But on the other hand, in any case, we'd say, well, this hypothesis, we tried it, we did the test.
Right.
The evidence was not there, because evidence is what we require.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So we agree on that. Yeah. That's good. And I'll look forward to your results. Now, I do have one more.
Digley's discussing results he hasn't had yet, so he has no evidence. Is this what he is saying? If he is so concerned about the next attacks, why has he taken so long to do the tests? Didn't he think of completing them before making a presentation at this conference?
I think to say about this, because iodine-110 was tested for a month after the...
Right.
It was just about a month after the event, after September 11th. And what was done there was...
Was this test by U.S. Geological Board?
Leoy et al., as I recall.
Did they test it from? Was it water samples or
it was sediment in the water.
Right. And what did they find?
And what they found was that they found sediment layers that clearly identified the World Trade Center dust on top. And it's identifiable, as I mentioned, you have...
How can they know it is clearly identified as WTC dust, especially if it contains little or no iron? And is it assumed the dust promptly sank to the bottom right by the shore? What about the stuff that floated elsewhere and floated downstream?
Have the silicon-rich spheres and the iron-rich spheres. I mean, there's no problem.
Right, because it was turned into a vapor, right? So.
I don't agree with that.
Your kind of vapor, because it had to the spheres after.
Okay.
It melted in these little tiny spheres and then kind of hurt.
Melting.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily.
Melted, but what about the dust? Was the melted stuff in the river? We had a lot of dust.
Evaporated, but certainly melted. Okay,
right.
There we go. Now we're in agreement. Okay, let's get back to 110. So the sediment, now they see an upper layer, which is from the World Trade Center, and then a layer below.
Right.
The iodine 110 was actually less in the upper layer, the World Trade Center layer, than the layer below.
Yeah.
To me... And this is in my paper, which is a letter in the Journal of 9/11 Studies.com. This is one of the key radioisotopes we were just discussing, 110 iodine.
Yeah, but you know that half-life of 110.
It's short. But
very short. In fact, it's gone with the days, which is why after Chernobyl...
But there's enough time for it to still be there. That was
If you're testing a month later, there may not be a detectable level.
There would be detectable levels after a month. We agreed that 110.
Plus, it also, you have to have the areas of the building, because I think there were layers of explosives. My thesis is not based on the idea that there was.
By then, 131, sorry.
Yeah, 131, yeah. The 131 disappears. We use it for medical tests and so on, and it's gone very, very quickly. So if you give a radio tracer of I-31 for a nuclear...
The point is the sediment below is even higher than the sediment above. So obviously it lasts long enough for you to have a measurement. And
well, it could just be background.
The argument was made by these scientists that there is then no, and they had other.
Yeah, but where was the dust that they gathered? Was it on a roof somewhere?
It's in the Hudson River, as I recall, the sediment. And the report is.
Oh, they picked it on the Hudson River.
It's in the sediment. It's in my. It's in my letter. It's quoted.
Well, some distance.
You can go to the original article.
Yeah.
I just had some notes from it.
Well, I have several scientific questions about this. First is that if it's a month after, it would be bound out of what I call within the range of background.
No, it's already lower than the sediment.
No, it doesn't matter. It's still within what I call...
Is the sediment below not gone?
Well, we know what happens is that, let's say the materials in the building had to be turned into particles, okay? And let's say that dust was blown out by thermite, right? Then the wallboard and the furniture and the people and everything ended up in the bottom of the Hudson River. That sediment debris... if it did have activated iodine-131, would have degraded to whatever the background for that material is.
What's the half-life?
The half-life is something like 72 hours. It's very, very short.
Iodine-131 has a half-life of about 8 days, 192 hours.
No, we should look that up.
But it's very, very short. I think it's even shorter than that, because when we actually give people radio ID, we tell them that in 72 hours they're back to background.
Well, so we can look it up. If anybody has internet, we can look it
so
up.
Anyway, so anyway, that would be my first answer in
black right now.
Serious scientists have analyzed, as opposed to what? Comedy scientists.
But they never went and looked for the other ones, though, right?
And the reason, they did look for others, I'll cover that. And it's in my paper. Now, hold on. Have you read, actually, my letter that addresses the mini-nuke hypothesis?
Yeah, I had a look at some of those things, yeah.
Did you read my paper in the journal?
Having a look at that, yeah.
Because this is one of the main points.
But did they test the beryllium-9, these other heavy isotopes that I'm talking
they
about?
They tested for iodine-131 specifically.
Now, did they do that by inductionally coupled plasma spectroscopy?
I didn't go back to
that. Yeah, because it's actually a calculation based on ionization, so you have to...
Look, they measured it in the sediment layer from the
World Trade Center
and below.
But what technology do they use for measuring it?
It's in their paper, I'm sure, but I don't have that recollection. I quoted the result, and I just...
Yeah, what they do is they use a thing called inductively coupled plasma ion spectroscopy. So, and he actually back calculated all the difference between the base isotopes and the other ones.
Now, in addition, they looked for this is a paper also cited in my paper,
right?
Where the scientists looked for alpha, beta, and gamma emissions.
Right.
They said the alpha emissions.
This
were
is in the sediment in the Hudson.
No, this is now in the dust, as I recall.
In the dust, at the bottom of the Hudson, yeah.
No, not at the bottom of the Hudson. The dust from the World Trade Center.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
Dry dust.
Dry dust, yeah.
So they look for, and you would agree, alpha, beta, gamma, that pretty well covers the emissions.
Well, of course, most of them, if there's neutron activation, though, to produce these type of things, they're going to disappear. They're going to disappear pretty quickly, though.
That varies a lot. I mean, cobalt-60 lasts a long time.
Oh, yeah, it's cobalt-60, but then you have to...
58, I think, would last quite a while.
But then it's also dependent on the base amount of what the cobalt-59 is before you even induct it, right?
Of course. Yeah. But, I mean, iron, you've got tons of iron.
Was there a lot of iron in the World Trade Center? Or was it steel? There is only a comparable tonnage of iron to whatever the thermate, if any, there was.
Iron would be a good one. In fact, if you got some steel, one of the things that's...
Have some steel.
One of the things that's very suspicious is the fact they hauled away the steel so quickly. So, but has anybody ever done an analysis for the heavy neutron-activated isotopes in iron?
Okay, I have a piece of the iron from the World Trade Center. This was left over from a monument that was put together.
Good.
And I have that, and it's bent. It's quite heavily bent.
So by bent, do you think it was physically bent from a physical wrenching, or was it bent from like a thermal pulse?
I showed it to a machinist. It's hard to tell, but it's clearly. Angle iron, and it's clearly opened.
What you want to do is you want to have a piece of metal that looks like it was literally cooked, like those that girder fry you see in the pictures.
It does have some residue on it. So
it looks like it was cooked either by high pressure, very hot temperature thermate, like you talked about, or the idea of a thermal pulse from a mini nuke or a conventional weapon, you'd want to see if there's neutron activation, because I only think a percentage of the actual debris of the building would be acceptable to the test, which is why my guess is less than 10% of the material that we would see would probably be samples of area where that might have occurred.
That's an interesting approach. Well, in any case, this is...
And it was worth testing it,
And I did look, just... I'm not saying this is the most sophisticated test, certainly, but I'd looked with Geiger counter, and this is about, last year.
Yeah, most of the isotopes, though, are going to be stable non-radioactive, though.
I guess you know the answer. It's in my paper again.
Yeah, they're going to be stable non-radioactive.
There was no radioactivity in this iron.
Repeated references to iron. Was it iron or steel they tested?
The steel from the World Trade Center that had been heavily damaged, and indeed there was a flow of material on it. This was a...
But the heavy isotopes are not radioactive.
There's nothing above background. And the results are, the numerical results are given in my paper. So I encourage you to read
it. One of the things about iron neutron activation is only a very tiny amount of the isotopes and has a relatively short half-life are going to be radioactive. The stable ones, like iron-58, are not radioactive at all.
So the point...
Iron-58 is a stable isotope, not radioactive.
I summarized in my paper various studies that had already looked for radioisotopes, including iodine-131, alpha, gamma, and beta emitters. And, of course, for myself, I looked at the steel and the dust sample
right.
that I have from Jeanette McKinley.
Right.
It'll be interesting if you see something that I missed.
What we're going to be doing is we're using a technology because we checked
and the others missed, too.
Yeah, we also have to use the right technology, too, because we're going to be looking for stable isotopes that are above background by a margin wide enough to see if it shows the isotope ratios that would indicate that there was enough mixing, because a pyroclastic cloud is going to be spreading and mixing. And also enough isotopes.
Why are you looking at the stable isotopes then?
No, we're looking for these ones like the higher and the heavier isotopes, like, you know, the ones like beryllium 9 and 10, niobium 94 and cobalt 59 and 60.
Beryllium 10 has a half-life of 1.51 times 10 to the 6 years. Niobium 94 has a half-life of 20,300 years. Why is Deagle looking for these things?
Well, cobalt 60 would be particularly interesting.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. But again, it depends on what was there. If we find the heavy isotopes of beryllium, that's going to be a real clincher, because beryllium is rare to see other than in places like around a nuclear device.
Okay. Now, so we need to underline that you're looking. That's good.
Right.
But the results are not yet in.
Oh no.
Okay.
And we'll see. We're planning on running probably at least 3 samples. And
where did Deagle get his samples? Is he testing Jones's sample, from which some of the dust came, and some of the thermite evidence was supposedly determined? The McKinley dust? Where did the other two samples come from?
If we get repeated samples negative there, or if we get one positive, we'll try to do it at a different lab. We're also asking people like yourself or our physicists to take samples of what you have and use similar types of technology. If we get a positive, we have to have someone independent like yourself go and test not only the samples you may have, but other ones to see if, mm-hmm. if even, say, one sample of 20 is positive for even some of these isotopes by a wide enough margin.
That's important. What you need the plus or minus, too,
right?
Plus or minus? Plus or minus what? 10%? 20%? Units? Quantities? What margins of error are acceptable? How about a nice graph with some error bars, perhaps?
Plus or minus of the range of confidence. You need enough samples positive, and it should be done by not just one individual. Say he has an agenda, so he's trying to make this positive to prove his theory.
Right.
So you can end up with independent corroboration.
Needs an independent lab. As we've done, by the way, with the iron-rich spheres, we have...
you've proven the thermite. That's a sign of doctrine.
We agree with that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think we're in fairly good agreement on what needs to be done, and I hope you will look at some of those other studies, which I did pull...
Oh, yeah, I'm going to look at those, yeah. I want to find the facts because, see, I'm not just looking to the idea of finding the mechanism that brought down the tower, which I think you've shown that for thermite and super thermite are there. I'm very concerned about what I've been told independently from my contacts inside the special op deltas and other agents that the next major two events that we need to worry is pandemics, like I mentioned about this talk about the Sunday test in Philadelphia. But also the danger of nukes going off. And they will not just use conventional thermite, super thermite. The next event that they're going to do in U.S. cities will be nukes going off in U.S. cities.
We sure
just
that
like the Virginia,
I mean,
just
sure
like the Virginia Harbor, the test here at the end of April 27th, when they finished the test, was a 100 kiloton nuke going off in Virginia Harbor. And they did a similar test last year in Charleston, South Carolina. And their idea was to do a war game simulation with not only North American, Canadian, and U.S., but also British security services, and also bring in foreign troops to control the population.
Yeah. Let me mention one thing to finish.
Yeah.
I think we're pretty well in agreement of goals and concerns. On the idea of some operation, some event in the United States, blamed probably on
Al-Qaeda, and then one attack around.
Who'll be carrying out these operations? Al-Qaeda? Son of Al-Qaeda? Isn't this important to consider?
Which I think between now and the fall is particularly danger creating, because I think they want to attack before Ramadan next year.
Okay. The what I would emphasize is that we've learned that with evidence we can learn a great deal. So if there is an event in, I won't even name a city.
Why not name a city? Deagle names a city in footnote 47, and it's Seattle.
Just say an American city blamed on Iran. Certainly there will be 9/11 truthers nearby.
Right.
And I hope they realize the importance of collecting a sample. whether that's dust or...
And also having radiation detectors, see, like Loren Moray said.
Right, having a radiation detector handy if you've got one.
There, right, and also being...
Geiger, if you send me a sample, I'd be glad to look. Bill, I'm sure you with your lab, so we could look. Yeah. So if there is such an...
The whole section is quite extraordinary, and a whole article could be written about this. Some of the main points, though, if there was such a terrible disaster, wouldn't the authorities deal with it? They should do the tests, take samples, not volunteers. So a city is nuked, then 9/11 truthers casually go out and, with their Walmart Geiger counters, altruistically not being worried about getting themselves irradiated, they collect the samples and send them to the man with the scientific method. And Deagle agrees, this is crazy, crazy stuff.
The point, the reason I'm emphasizing this is because it's a bit of a warning. If there are perpetrators thinking about another 9/11, they better think twice, because 9/11 truthers are out there. We're watching. We will get samples. We know what to do. Evidence-based studies we can do very quickly.
Yeah.
And we can put an end to lies on the next 9/11 if they're contemplating.
Yeah, I can guarantee
which I hope
they
will avoid, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, we've already probably stopped. In fact, a lot of the work that you've done and many other 9/11 truthers, I think,
and Alex
stopped.
Jones.
And Alex Jones and all the great leaders. I think what's been done is we probably don't know how many 9/11 type events we've already stopped.
It could well be. Good point.
I can't escape.
I think we're done.
I think we're done.
A simple question, and that is, in regards to what you just mentioned, how shall people maintain continuity of evidence to get that to you?
It's a chain of custody.
It's a chain of custody
form.
It's chain of custody. It's very important. Right.
I can tell because I'm a medical legal expert on this. What you want to do is you want to bring it to an attorney or a notary public, and you have to actually sign an affidavit that you collected the specimen on a specific date and time with a legal date. Then it needs to have a chain of custody form that's signed and sealed, and has to have a seal that can't be broken. That seal, if it's broken, means that the chain is broken, okay? So the bag then has to go off in a sealed container to a laboratory by a signed courier with a chain of custody number on it, right? When it arrives there, it has to get an internal chain of custody number intake. So there's no breaking of the chain.
Apparently Jones's McKinley dust sample does not have a chain of custody like the one Deagle describes. So how can an international trial be initiated with any evidentiary foundation? Does Deagle have a chain of custody for the three samples he is testing?
I think that's an important point. We're talking about amateur people, not helpers.
Right.
And so if you get multiple people, three or more, for example, filming, someone collecting, and then seal that in a bag. The dust, as we've learned, has a great deal of information carried with it.
Right.
And if that can then be taken to a notary, that's fine.
Yeah.
But it seems to me if it's videotaped, the procedure, I mean, these people that are collecting it are not going to know, well, let's see, I've got to add iodine-131 and plus an equal amount of cobalt-60. No, they're just going to collect the dust, send it off. I think we can get a very credible case and in a very short time if we have the cooperation of truthers, if there is another 9/11-like event.
Right.
We can nail this and we can stop this.
Well,
that's a great goal.
Yeah, and I think that we're, I really believe that meetings like this have stopped the death of millions. What I was told back in 94 by a special agent who was actually in a cold sweat telling me this is that at that time they already had 22 cities that were pre-wired with nukes. And he even told me the names of the cities and told me the top ones that are targets.
So why has Deagle kept this information to himself if he knows acts of terrorism are going to be committed? Is he not committing a crime by not taking this information to the Department of Homeland Security or whoever?
I've heard of some of these names. Yeah.
Right.
One
is
not far from here, actually.
Yeah, Seattle.
I would just like to make it...
So presumably this information has been passed to the authorities in Seattle so that they can find out where the nukes are. They've been there for so many years. So why isn't it now time to find them and disable them?
Dr. Deagle, like on a scale of maybe 1 to 100, what percentage would you say that you agree with Dr. Jones' thesis that thermite was used in...
Oh, I bet 100% that thermite was used. 100%.
He's just saying that there's
There's thermodynamics. There's no doubt about that. But
the difference between your two theories, if I'm getting it right, is Dr. Jones is not pursuing a thermonuclear breakdown of the World Trade Centers, and you're continuing to do research.
Researching it to make sure we need to know what demolished it, and if it was superthermite, then it means it's powerful enough to bring down these twin towers and create.
Can't superthermite be tested in controlled conditions to establish its destructive potency? Wouldn't this be a better way to make such a determination?
...piles and all the anomalies that we saw. If it wasn't, I think, this is my own opinion now, if we do find evidence of nukes in the World Trade Center, and we're going to also get the concrete cap off of the Murrow building, because there was, I was told this by the special agent that told me this, there was two unexploded micronukes, a C4 pineapple, RDX, and there was thermite in the building that was not exploded in the Oklahoma City Murrow building.
Readers might also compare the damage in the Murrah building with that in World Trade Center 6. This is on Dr. Judy Wood's website.
I was told that face-to-face by this agent, special ops agent. So I know there was thermite in the building. What I'm concerned about is if there's any evidence at all that there were the use even in some portions of the building of micronukes, it greatly increases the danger, I think, of nukes going off in U.S. cities in the next few months.
Professor Jones, can I just clarify?
Sure.
You said thermite is used to help bring the building up, as you've also allowed for.
Oh, absolutely. C4, RDX.
Yeah, there could have been other ones. They had a whole bunch of layers. Like, this guy literally told five or six things, and he spent hours with me explaining, because my background is a chemist.
What evidence is there that they use layers of explosives to destroy buildings? How is this done in Oklahoma? And can Deagle supply more details?
Right, before I went to medicine, I was a biochemist. And so I understood, and I said, okay, well, you got to explain this to me, because he's a forensic munitions guy. And he told me there were layers. And when they do these, it's like a work of art. This is my thesis, as I mentioned before, was that I think that they literally blew out the building with the thermite and the floors and so on, but that they took out the core of the building with these micronuclear devices. Now, that could be wrong. Maybe they used thermite there, too. But if they did use it to bring out the core of the building using thermite, and they may have even, with micronukes, and they may have started from upper floors and done it so many floors apart, that changes the thesis of what they might do when they do their next operation, because it's, again, a controlled demolition if they take out, say, 16, 20 blocks of, say, Los Angeles. And like the top three cities, L.A. is one of the top three cities that's likely to be hit.
Deagle has a very impressive CV, a medical and legal doctor, a chemist and a biochemist. Good for him. And how many floors were these explosives planted? All of them? Half of them? Three quarters? Again, who is doing the operation? Can't they be traced and stopped? Or is the attack inevitable? Is that what they're telling us?
Okay.
Wouldn't nuclear reactions spread the radiation if you're using nuclear bombs?
It depends. If it's a fourth generation one, they
have a lot of contamination that would spread evenly.
Well, they're not dirty bombs. Remember now, these bombs now, the new fourth generation nukes, and I was told this by people in NSA, The bombs that they have now, since the 1950s, they have types of nuclear bombs that can generate mostly gamma rays, mostly neutrons, like a neutron bomb they talk about for battlefield weapons, mostly electromagnetic pulse. So they can have weapons that give very little blast, but give a massive electromagnetic pulse. So they can be very selective in the energy distribution patterns of the type of weapons they have now. And I was told, and this is, again, stuff that's not conventional, that they can detonate these without having to use a nuclear fission-fusion type, you know, triggering thing, but use these ultra-powerful magnetic pulses and lasers in order to actually generate.
Will the trigger be fusion or fission? How is fission achieved without critical mass?
Explosions.
If they really have that, we have an energy solution. So these guys are...
Well, they're sitting on it. They don't want to have it.
They're sitting on it.
Of course they are.
But I don't think Curtis had a chance really to ask your question. Yeah. Did you?
Well, I guess my biggest... point here, I guess, question to both of you then is, it looks like you're looking for a motive for something that brought the building down other than what you both agreed.
Why does Jones suddenly change the subject here when it was getting so interesting?
Well, the reason why I'm looking for the extra additional things is because of what I know independently about the danger of the next event. Because I know we have enough right now with the thermite to start the International Court of Justice. That needs to happen now. But if we get additional evidence that there were nukes,
the chain of
thermite can be acquired, through eBay and through, munitions forensic companies that can actually detonate buildings. You can't acquire fourth generation micronukes except from the U.S. military. Because the ones that they took from the World Trade Center, from the Oklahoma City Murrah building, which were, I was told, and this is very specific, the U.S. Corps of Engineers, 1/10 of a kiloton detonation, excavating micro-nukes.
Are they for excavation or for controlled demolition, like in the towers? For controlled demolition, the directional control of the explosive is surely far more important than for excavation, to ensure orderly collapse of the building. Why isn't Jones picking Deagle up on things like this?
Okay, so with those specific requirements, we're talking about only one source where they could have required that type of detonation equipment. So if they, that even makes it more damning in terms of who did the detonations. We know it was a controlled demolition, and we know there was thermite in it. But if we find the evidence that there were nuclear devices, even for parts of the building, even for a part like the top or somewhere in the core, then it makes it much, much more devastating for the other side to try to protect against the idea that the U.S. government and elements within the FBI and ATF were involved. Because we know the first attack on the World Trade Center in 93, and this is in the Wall Street Journal, December 24th, was actually done by the FBI hiring the Egyptian munitions forensics. So the grave danger here is if my test is negative, it actually buttresses Dr. Jones' theory more. But if it's positive, it puts us in much more danger of them actually blowing up nukes in multiple cities.
Again, who would blow up cities, multiple nukes in multiple cities?
And it also changes the level of...
Curtis had a little more to his...
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I guess the question then is the evidence leading you to this, or are you following an idea to the evidence then?
We're trying to let the science lead. When you're a scientist, you don't try to get a priori ideas. You try to look at the anomalies, develop a hypothesis that could explain it, and there's some difference in terms of our interpretation of what we have so far, but you set up a test that can determine whether the hypothesis is supported or not, and if it is positive, if the test is negative from the heavy isotopes that we're testing, it gives absolute support to the thermite theory for Dr. Jones. If it's negative, if it's positive, it means that it's
absolute, or there may be another hypothesis that a negative result supports, such as the large-scale use of directed energy weapons. Isn't this a false choice?
In addition to thermite, which is already proven that they use layers of other explosives, including nukes, they could only be sourced from the U.S. government and the military.
Just to clarify, you did have a paper and several studies that said that they had already tested for these nuclear...
That's right. My paper, my letter, and the Journal of 9/11 Studies cites other studies that have already been done looking for iodine-131 and then alpha, beta, gamma emitters and finding things in the World Trade Center.
Perhaps the military needs to be questioned about what they're talking about here. Now, is Jones's paper a paper or a letter? Being a letter, it is less likely to have been peer-reviewed. Why write a letter to his own journal?
Well, most of those alpha, beta, gamma emitters of astute neutron activation are in things like calcium and phosphate. In other words, those disappear pretty quickly. So what I'm looking for is...
But some are long lives.
They're harder to find, though. We're going to find out here shortly if the tests show positive, and again, as I say, less than 10% of the material could even be acceptable that may even carry it, because if there isn't sufficient mixing with the areas where these, quote, hypothetical micro-nukes might have gone off. So, but here's the good thing about it. If the test is done from the neutron activation isotopes, and let's say all three samples are negative, it means absolute support that the thermite, which I agree is there, is even more supported, and that it buttresses what Dr. Jones has said even more.
Okay.
So there's still no evidence in this evidence-based discussion of micronukes. That's basically what they seem to be saying. And Jones suggests the use of C4, RDX, and Deagle says C35, a whole bunch of layers, which therefore contradicts the notion of superthermite doing all the damage. So here they're contradicting themselves left, right, and centre.
And it means that the superthermite was sufficient to do all of the damage rather than just some of it, and that we don't have to hypothesize. So it's actually, because it's science moves forward rather than, you know, sideways, it means that it adds additional support rather than taking away from
one
it.
One less theory to consider. Yeah.
Well, it's also very serious. It means that superthermite had to be put in there, and it actually supports what Dr. Jones said.
Yeah, we've got another
interview. Can I mention one thing just for the record, Curtis?
Sure thing.
Just, which I... there is a form of thermite, TH3, that's used by the military in grenades. That's correct. But what I wanted to mention, this I didn't say publicly, but I would at least like to get it on the record, just in case something happens. But in the dust, We recently, this student and I, looking at the dust.
So who is Jones working with? Is Dr. Jones working with the students in his retirement? Because he is retired at this point. On what foundation? Who is funding the research in retirement?
Optically, you see these red specks, lots of them in the dust. I was curious. These are not spheres. They're chunks and pieces. They look like shells, like an eggshell, kind of. Thicker than that, but that's what they look like, broken up eggshell.
You mean under scanning electron microscope?
No, this is optically, and looking at with the stereo microscope, about 100 power.
100 power, yeah, so they're pretty big chunks.
They're fairly good size, yeah. That's right. Now we go to the scanning electron microscope and do the EDS testing, and we see...
Why have these only been discussed now? Where are they from, anyway? McKinley dust? Has Jones only just noticed them after a year?
Iron, aluminum, and sulfur in these chunks.
Yeah.
And what? Well, I don't even like it could be the thermate before it's exploded, and then it just broke into pieces. So that's something we're pursuing. I'm not saying that's...
You mean the thermate before the thermate might have been exploded or broken before?
That's right. Before the reaction, this material in this shell form. So we're pursuing that. That would be a great discovery to find it after and before.
So in other words, there may have been some thermate areas that weren't exploded, but they were blown up.
That were blown up, and you have these little pieces now.
Oh, really?
Yes. And so we're very excited.
So by testing that, if for example, the test is positive for the radioisotopes, and you look at this and it does show fragments of unexploded thermate, right, then it could further support not only the thermate theory, but the thermate plus micronukes. Yeah.
So we're pursuing the, you know, the data leads you along, and I think that was one of Curtis's points.
Yeah.
And it's quite exciting as a scientist. It's a bit of an adventure. Wow, look, there's some red stuff. I'm not sure why it's red, but it has aluminum, sulfur, and iron.
Can't it be analyzed with a mass spectrometer, this red material, and then you'd know what it was, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And then that just matches what you expect for thermite. Well, but of course, as a citizen, you say, wow, this is really getting very obvious.
Yeah. I really think that at the end, statement is, if this is positive, it just adds another layer. It does not disprove the thermite. The thermite 100% agree that and there's no directed energy weapons or any other exotic type of thing.
Great.
They could have done it.
All right. Good. We're in quite good agreement then. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank
you. You're welcome. You take care.
You too.
Thanks.
So overall, really a very confusing discussion with no real evidence discussed openly and honestly. They switch topics, they jumble things around, they get basic facts wrong. And this is a discussion by two PhDs. I'll leave you to make your own conclusions.